are back. Second hour of We the People Radio. That was a good first hour.
My pen.
I learned a lot of things that I should do and shouldn't do. And
just like Mental Health Sunday. That sounded a lot like mental hell. I meant Mental Health Sunday.
I have a feeling it's going to be a little bit of mental hell here.
I did learn that there is a place called hell in Norway, and it freezes every other winter. I learned that on Twitter last night. I'm like, who would name their town that? Maybe in Norwegian it's a different word.
So hell actually does freeze over.
It does. Yes, it does. Know. That was the whole point of actually the story, and don't ask me what made me think of that. relatively inappropriate. So, Mr. Guy Asherman.
Hi.
Turns out, in addition to being a pastor, you are a marriage and family therapist. I thought, this is Mental Health Sunday.
Yeah. Great way to get into the new year.
Exactly.
If you're here, you are going to learn a lot.
Well, you
know. You get a foot up on everybody else. A foot up.
It's a leg.
A leg up, yeah. A leg, a foot, a hand.
We're obviously going to need.
I think I was in the back of my mind, I was thinking a boot in the.
No, that's different.
That's different, too.
That's a whole different motivation there. That's the one where the New Year's resolution doesn't go well.
I'm sure if Tom was here, he'd tell me what that meant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That probably means something.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Yeah, we didn't analyze any dreams or do any of that good stuff. We just kind of talked about how to. You know,
yeah. I tried not to look
Stay
in the
eye. Stay on the straight and narrow. Yeah, Bill's in the chat room writing, he's looking at me again.
Stop looking at me.
You're killing me. So how was Christmas?
It was great.
Packed house?
It was, yeah. You know, because you always have that large group of people that go to church twice a year.
Yes.
Yep.
One on Christmas and once on Easter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we welcome them for their
punch
journey.
Their ticket. Yep.
Yeah. And yep. So, yeah, we had had a great time, had a good group, and, of course, it's always a time of mixed emotions, you know. It's the end of the year. It's been a good year. It's been a bad year. It's been Christmas. And yeah. We like to say Christmas is a time for family, but that's not always a good thing either. So
yeah.
There's a lot of brokenness and a lot of pain and a lot of hurt, mm-hmm. but there's also a lot of reason to rejoice and to focus our priorities where they need to be.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you do marriage and family therapy, you see a lot of folks who have issues in the marriage and family thing. But just
well, they're the people that want to admit they have issues. There's a lot of everybody has issues.
Right, the other people are repressing it.
Yeah, they're just not going to admit it. Yeah.
So how much of the group do you think in the world, how many people are really struggling there? Most? Half?
Well, maybe the best way to describe it is that there are those who know they have them and those who don't, as Bill suggested.
Ah, Bill's right again. Darn
because
it.
we all have our struggles. We have different ways of coping with it.
Sure.
And but I think the family unit is in serious trouble, not just in this country, but around the world. I think mm-hmm. it always has been, and it's just because it's happening more here at home, and we see it, that we have a tendency to believe the sky is falling. But the family unit's been in trouble since the beginning, and always for the same reasons.
Which are?
In
what you just kind of,
sure.
you know, we're going to talk in generalities. So.
Yeah. Well, this is a principle, I think, that applies to everything in our lives, and that is that there are unseen powers and forces that are responsible for what happens in our lives. And we as a country, the more secular we are becoming, have been living under the illusion that America is good or family is good and that we have done a good job because of something we did, something we believed, without a recognition that there's more than just principle involved with holding life together. I think that there is the person of the Lord who holds life together in ways we do not yet or may never fully comprehend until we meet him. I think the family unit today is falling apart because, you know, as families, we have basically said, God, we got this one. We can do this without
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you were a luxury at some point in time in the olden days.
Sure. And that applies to politics. That applies mm-hmm. to everything that we, I think, have been living in ignorance for quite some time now, that what made America great is that God made this country great, and he held things together. And now that we have, again, kind of washed our hands of him, he's kind of leaving us to our own devices, and it's not working very well.
It's not working out so great.
No, because we kind of think it's steering the ship. I mean, that's not really where we shine.
Right. Right. Well, we want to steer it, not him, and we don't do so good.
We're good deckhands.
Yeah.
Bad captains. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
We're all kicking each other under the table. Interesting. And so, what do you tell people when they come in? What's like the first thing? If somebody comes in and says, you know, we're just not getting along, we're thinking about, you know, maybe getting divorced, but we've got kids and, you know, we know it's not good for them and.
Yeah. Well, it's a challenge, Aaron, because what people are looking for when they go to see a counselor is a non-judgmental, completely clean slate. I love you for who you are and the choices you make, and so I will not pass judgment on anything that you tell me.
Nobody's fault.
Yeah, it's all about unconditional love. And by the way, I think a counselor should be all of those things for people. The problem being is that there is still a right way and a wrong way to live life. And when you suggest to people that there's a better way of doing things, it feels judgmental to them.
Oh.
So what people want is make my life better, but don't make me change. Don't make me responsible. And that's pretty hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have to meet people where they are and try to love them and encourage them as best we possibly can. And maybe the best way to respond to some of the brokenness and the choices that we're making in life and fulfilling the definition of insanity by doing the same things over and over and expecting different results is to just simply ask, how's that working for you? Because the answer to that is not very good. Okay, mm-hmm. Then what do you want to do about it? And that hopefully gets us rolling into a healthy direction and discussion of how much of this is in my power and what choices can I make that's going to help it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And for as far as like you know, families with kids,
mm-hmm.
obviously, I mean, families can be just two people too, but mm-hmm. families with children, especially young children,
mm-hmm.
think it's better if the folks stick together and kind of duke it out or.
Well, depending on how you define duke it out.
I know.
That's a loaded.
I kind of loaded that on purpose.
you know, we have our ideals. Mm-hmm. We have even biblical concepts of what family is to be.
Oh,
we have biblical concepts about, you know, divorce and marriage and remarriage and all of that. And, you know, I'm a family therapist. Therefore, I am pro-family. An awful lot of family therapists are not necessarily pro-family, interestingly enough.
What?
But
really?
Yeah, because sometimes the first advice they give people is, yeah, I think your marriage is over. You better chuck it. But awesome. I think that there are times when the family turmoil is so bad that it's actually healthier for children if we decide to do something different than duking it out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you have to. It was interesting. I was talking to somebody, and they said, well, I just don't feel like this was a lady. And she said, you know, I don't feel like my husband really respects me that much. I don't think he doesn't mm-hmm. really make me feel loved and that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. and it's been, oh, you know, there's a tit for tat going on. Mm-hmm. You know, like I did this, he did that, I did this, he did that. And I'm thinking, how exhausting that you would be keeping score like that. I mean, really, how exhausting. And who's ever going to win a game like that?
Right. And there's usually underlying issues as to why they're resorting to that.
Yeah.
That oftentimes are not readily accessible in our hearts and minds or even discovering it.
I suggested maybe she just pretend he was being nice. Forget about all the other stuff. And for a week, just pretend.
Yeah.
Just try that and see what it felt like. And it was kind of funny. She called back and she said, you know, actually, this week was kind of great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, throw away the scorebook.
Well, and certainly.
That was probably bad advice, but I didn't have anything else at my disposal.
No, I think it was great advice.
And I thought it sounded exhausting.
Yeah. Sometimes we have to do what we know is right, whether we feel like it or not. And that's kind of, it sounds to me like that's kind of what you were telling her is do the right thing, treat him well, he can treat you well. And it helps, it works.
Well, do it without, I guess it's not like putting money in a gumball machine. You know, I think some of what was going on was I put my money in the gumball machine and I got cheated because nothing came out.
Right.
And
right.
It's like, you know, life isn't really like that.
Sure.
And people aren't really like that.
Yeah.
Do kids always want their folks to get back together, especially when they're little?
Yes.
They Seems do. Like they probably do.
Yes, because that's their only experience with family. It's all they've ever known. It's all they've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate thing with families is that oftentimes children will accept the responsibility for the breakup of their mom and dad because, you know, they're not perfect. They've done things wrong.
They think they did it.
Well, they've seen mom and dad perhaps argue over the way to raise children.
Oh.
And which happens in almost every family. Unfortunately, we don't have the discretion to not do that in front of them. And so children oftentimes assume a parental role, interestingly enough, and they feel the responsibility to fix their mom and dad's marriage. And a reverse parental role is never healthy for kids. It puts the responsibility in their minds, on their shoulders, for helping two other people get along when they should.
Do they always feel that it's their fault? I mean, when they're not getting along, do they put themselves in that role?
Almost always.
They
accept some degree of responsibility for it.
Mm.
And it's not fair, it's not
no.
healthy,
mm-hmm.
but it's the
no.
reality of it.
Now, do you work, I would imagine you work with the kids too?
Yes.
The mom, the dad, the kids. Do you have them all in? You don't have them all in there at the same time, though.
Sometimes.
Really?
Depending upon the age of the children. And, you know, sometimes, you know. If they're teenage kids, for example, yeah, I'll have them all in. If they're younger, I might do individual work with them. But no, if the teenagers are smart enough to know what's going on, and maybe they are contributing to some of the unrest.
It would seem like that would be a really difficult role to take because you're there to point out or highlight what's wrong with them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and people take that personal and,
sure.
and get – kind of itchy with that and probably don't want to come back.
Right. Well, and of course, it's not about finding fault. It's not about who do we blame here. It's about dealing with the reality of it. What can we do to go better, to move forward and do better? But certainly from my perspective, and I think almost everybody who's in this business of trying to help families, is, you know, we have our own baggage. And for us to say there's something wrong with you and this is what you need to do, probably the best approach is, you know, your story sounds an awful lot like mine.
Yeah,
there's brokenness in my heart and in my life, too. So let me just share what worked for me, what doesn't work for me. And if some of that sticks or works for you, then we can run with it. But, you know, for any of us to say we have the answers and you don't, we don't, you know,
mm-hmm.
we don't.
But sure.
But we help. We try to work it through together.
That's the feel, felt, found principle there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Yeah. Like they went there to find out about you.
Mm-hmm.
Not. We're going to be back with Guy Asherman here in just a couple of minutes. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us on the chat. We're having a little sidebar discussion on there. You can get there at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice. Bob. Bob's picked the ultimate song for us yet again.
We can't get through the show without playing this one.
No, we can't, can we?
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Mother's tired, she needs a rest. Playing up downstairs, sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed.
No, it's not allowed. Classic.
It fits.
There you go.
Yeah.
The ultimate marriage and family counseling theme song.
Yes.
I believe. Because the other one, my give a damn's busted, that's probably not the one you want to use.
And all my exes live in Texas.
Yeah, there's that one. That's true. You have a lot of options. So we were talking a little bit during the break there about politics in the pulpit.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so what's the balancing act there?
Of course, the world says, or people say, and it's a cliche that's been around for probably centuries, you know, with your friends, you never talk politics and religion. And I'm kind of in the business of both.
Yeah, we talk about politics and religion all the time.
Sure,
we like it.
Sure. And And I think the reason that we say that is because whatever our views may be, we're usually passionate about it. And if we are passionate, it comes across passionately. And other folks, of course, want to make a counterpoint. So we're not very good at listening to one another, but we're very good at sharing. So, the idea of politics and religion, for me, and I think probably is a good idea for people of faith, to have those things prioritized. And that is that my faith is more important than my politics. Yes, I am passionate about it, but my faith is what directs my life. But, of course, my faith permeates every chamber of my heart, every discipline of life. Faith is a part of that.
Sure.
So our faith is a part of our politics. It is a part of what we believe about country, about God, about personal responsibility, and you can go on and on.
Well, it's the basis of what we see as right and wrong, and right and wrong is a big place.
Yes, and if we don't have something that clearly provides the foundation of what right and wrong is, then we're on a wild goose chase, and it's subject to people's opinions. Everybody has different opinions. And even though people will say, well, you can't legislate morality, actually, you can't legislate without it, because politics is about promoting what is good and trying to discourage what is bad. Well, how do you define what's good and bad? Thus, the confusion we have in our country today is a reflection of our religious state. We're hurting in the area of knowing and understanding our faith, and that reflects in our family issues. It reflects in our political issues.
And well, we're trying to pretend that there is some objective standard that doesn't involve God.
Right.
That somewhere, you know, there is a right place that has nothing to do with morality.
Do you run into families that haven't really taken an active hand in introducing religion to the children in the family?
Yes, and people themselves as adults are not quite sure where they stand, and introducing children to it can be a real complicated mess because, number one, parents may not know. But media and culture, the secular society that we live in today is sending so many mixed signals.
Sure.
And even for parents who are firm in their faith and know what they believe and are very well grounded in that, teaching their children what they believe, sometimes they're the only voice that their kids are hearing. And the schools and society and the media are basically telling kids, your parents are nuts. Mm-hmm. Don't listen to them. Hurry up, grow up, and get out as quick as you can so that you don't have to do what other people tell you to do. That's their terminology, not mine.
I think they did that when we were kids.
But there was.
But it's a lot louder now.
It's louder. Yes, they were challenging our values, and always have.
Sure.
But I think that we have undermined the family structure so significantly that we're not, you know, the rooster has come home, so to speak. Isn't that the expression? And
the chickens have come home to roost.
That's what it is. Thank you. I knew there was a roost in it somewhere.
We had Bill's foot and his leg, and now we've moved.
And so
we're going to rewrite all of them.
And some of that, you know, probably can also be summarized in the area of authority, that we don't want authority. We don't recognize authority, not in government. Not in Ferguson, not in Redding, California, not in the church, not...
And especially not if it's messing up our fun.
Yeah.
And it's telling us to do things that maybe are hard, you know.
Yes.
We just don't want to.
Right. And certainly we don't want to recognize God as an authority either. Mm. And so all of the areas where we have authority issues in our society today all stem from the idea that if God is not in control, if God is not an authority, then anything goes. His desk is where every buck stops. But if you don't recognize his desk,
you take that away, then you're pretty much open to do whatever you feel is right.
Well,
makes you feel good.
How much of that, I mean, kind of back to the counseling, because this, I guess, becomes a mental health issue. How much of that really makes the world unstable for people? I mean, the idea that there is no God, God is, I mean, you know, because I always think about it, you do the right thing for the right reasons. It'll all work out, not necessarily in your time.
Right. Well, I think that historically in our lifetime when we were youngsters, the idea that even though back in those days, not that it was that long ago, right? A few years ago when we were children.
That's right. easy on that, Wade.
53.
We were able to say as a culture that we're not sure that, God is going to have that preeminent place in our life that he used to have, but we still lived with the fruit of it from previous decades and centuries. So we were a culture that was more functional than we are today. But as time goes on, the more and more we leave that behind, succeeding generations don't have any kind of a foundation, whether it's cultural, biblical, or whatever, that we're falling further and further away from any concept of there being an absolute truth. Now, of course, today we live in an era that is called postmodernism. And you know, postmodernists believe that your truth is your truth, my truth, there is no absolute truth. Therefore, who's to say what you believe is right or wrong for me?
And if we all go along with that, we'll have no problems.
Yeah, exactly.
we'll wander aimlessly in the desert.
Right. We'll be okay.
Well, the result is anarchy. And by the way, we're well on the path of anarchy. And yet even those who say, you know, that religion is what actually created problems. Religion creates a frustrated conscience. If there were no right and wrong, people wouldn't suffer from a guilty conscience. I disagree with that premise because I think that innately there
it's built in.
It is built
it
in.
It is built in because
you have to have, you know, that guilt.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I realize that we don't probably take our dogs to therapy, but you see that with dogs. Mm. You know, we come home and it's like, you know, you look at him, what have you guys been doing? And one of them, like, looks up at us, and the other one goes and hides. You're like, oh, somebody peed on the rug. You know? I mean, even animals know.
Yeah.
And I know they don't know English, so, you know, what was it about that look that made him go and hide? And then you find, yes, somebody was up to no good.
Sure.
I mean, people have to have. I mean, if our animals have it.
Right. They messed on the rug. They knew they weren't supposed to, and
they were
caught.
They were up to no good while we were gone, and they knew it, and they were waiting for us to come home. And so people, of course, have.
And certainly there are cultural influences that impact our conscience. I think our conscience comes from the culture of our families. It comes from our churches. It comes from society in general. And I do think that consciences can be programmed incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
For example, people in the world today are programmed to believe that if you want to have a clear conscience before God, you have to go kill people.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah, because that's part of how you get there.
Yeah.
Confusing.
Yeah. And if you refuse to do that, then there's something wrong with you. Well, now that's an extreme case, and we see that operating amongst us in very,
you have to go strap bombs to your kids.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that makes you a good child of God.
Well, I think conscience and character kind of go hand in hand, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a big building block right there.
Well, I think it is because if I'm going to have good character in my life, I have to have a conscience that's sensitive to not doing wrong things.
Mistreating people
So character and conscience are very much related.
Mm-hmm.
So when you really feel that there's something coming on the ballot, for instance, that that has an element of morality to it, and you need to bring it up at church, how do you go about that?
Well, you know, we try to be careful because I don't want people to think that I believe the answers to this country are found in politics.
Sure.
I do not believe that. Furthermore, I don't want to give an endorsement to a man because he has values that are more consistent with mine, and then he ends up being the Antichrist.
Being an idiot,
You know?
But I mean, like, things that would be like a measure of something.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a marijuana thing, or it's a
family, marriage, Prop 8.
Yeah, Prop 8. Yeah. Or, there's a whole lot of stuff down that road.
I think that we have an obligation morally as well as civilly to encourage people to vote their conscience, like we just mentioned. And conscience can be programmed correctly or incorrectly. And I think that the ministry of the church, hopefully, is that we help people's conscience be programmed according to God's views of what life is supposed to be and what good choices and bad choices look like. So when it comes to those kinds of issues, what's good for a country, I happen to believe that God knows what's good for a country. And his standards have never been improved on. We're trying desperately. We're failing miserably.
Yeah.
And our answer to that, our solution to the fact that we're failing miserably is to continue to do more and more of what was wrong in the first place instead of just going back to what it was. Right?
Sure.
We're fools. And so I think that it's okay, and I do it, and I think other pastors do, many of them, to be able to say, you know, there's an issue, there's an initiative that is contrary to what we believe Scripture teaches. And I think that you ought to vote your moral conscience the way the Scriptures would direct you, with an understanding that if we're going to turn this country around, it's not going to be your vote, it's going to be God. Let me also address this from the standpoint of, for believers, for the believers that are listening today, what is our hope? As I look at Scripture, and we're grateful for our system of government here. We're grateful for democracy. There's a lot of good things about it. But as I look at Scripture, I have never seen where majority sided with God, even in the people of Israel.
Uh-huh.
It was a people in rebellion. In fact, the whole human race is in rebellion. And at times, God in his goodness intervened, not always in very what we would consider to be nice ways, but God intervenes. And that God is not looking for majority to save this country. We live with that. We want it to be that. And we will work for that.
But a lot of people believe that that's required.
And we're now being disillusioned by that, because if, in fact, what's happening in this country is the fruit of the majority rule, heaven help us. Because we don't necessarily like the decisions that are coming down. And as a people, as a nation, our values are very, very different from what they used to be. In Scripture, God never sided with the majority. The majority was usually that which he battled. And a famous evangelist years ago by the name of Bob Jones coined this phrase, and you've perhaps heard it, and it's been used many times, and that is that you and God make a majority. And I think that the important thing for us as believers, as citizens, is do the right thing, vote the right way, and don't worry about the majority, because this is what happens. When we start getting worried about getting the majority, we start fudging on right and wrong. We start saying, you know, I can get a few more votes if I can just soften my view on this, my view on that. And pretty soon it's so watered down.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You don't represent anything anymore.
Because, try to be all things to all people.
Yes. Winning is not getting a majority of votes. Winning is when right things prevail in life. That's winning. Because we have seen a lot of folks who have been placed into office in any party, all parties, who got there by way of majority vote, but they were not statesmen.
Sure.
They prostituted themselves to get the majority of votes. And we don't need that in politics. We need people with convictions.
Absolutely.
You know, and so.
And plenty of it.
A lot of it. Yeah.
A
lot of it. And if that means I'm not going to get a vote, okay, my conscience.
That's right.
Comes
your
back conscience, to conscience
is clear, and you right. know you did the right thing,
yeah.
and you can stand behind it.
Yes,
and you can tell people.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's another part of the equation, isn't it? Is being able to voice that opinion to others, to
sure.
give them a clear conscience and a
well,
little
at least
bit of a moral
they know,
compass.
If they don't like you, at least they know what they don't like. You stood for something.
Well, maybe they never heard it from anybody before.
But
true story.
The interesting thing today is that in the PC world is that it's okay to share your thoughts and your feelings so long as they are in this camp.
Right.
If you have thoughts and feelings that are contrary to that,
yeah.
then we're going to try to shout you down. So I come from a conservative religious and political standpoint. So those in our camp are kind of used to being shouted down. And so freedom from the perspective of those who disagree with me is really not the same kind of freedom that those in our camp believe. Because we believe that they do have a right to share their thoughts and their feelings. Hey, freedom of speech. But they don't necessarily give us that same benefit in return.
Mm-hmm. No, not most of the time. Most
it's a
of the
double
time,
standard.
There's a little bit of grief there.
Well, I think another thing that people...
Hold on, we've got to take a really quick break.
Oh,
otherwise,
great point.
I know. You're going to have to... We're going to hear Bill's. We're going to hear Bill's great idea during the break. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio, and if you would like to call us, You still have time. 530-605-4567. And we're online at wethepeopleradio.us. Here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Great song. I've never heard that one. That's a great song.
That is a great song.
So that was the song that introduced Carrie Underwood to the world.
Really?
Yeah.
I did.
When she right after she won American Idol in 2005.
See, that's why you're in charge of the music. And the rest of us just listen.
And they're trying to shout her down now, by the way, too, for her faith.
Really?
In some of the country and western community. Yeah.
I got to tell you, it does. I found the cartoon that I was tying up. I told you guys during the break, but a little thing on Twitter. You know, it's good for this kind of stuff. It says, I adore being cussed out and bullied by leftists for not being as tolerant as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know that back during the revolution, the pastors were really the movers and shakers of the revolution, the black robes.
And the church was the meeting place. That's where
exactly.
That's where our founding documents were written up. And certainly the philosophy, although not all of our founding fathers were Christians, but they were at the very least deists of some kind, and certainly influenced by a culture that was directed by the values of the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, there was a significant part in who we are, making who we are, and in that came the freedoms that we have. For people to say that Christianity denies freedoms or that we're the oppressors is an insane statement, because actually it was our values, Christian values, that gave us the Constitution that we have that allowed people who disagree with us a platform to disagree with us. And now that they have perhaps a stronger voice in the community, in our society, than we do, what do they want to do but to silence us, as opposed to us giving mm-hmm. them the freedom and the liberty to become who they are?
Well, you look at, I mean, we were talking about it at the beginning, like 10% or fewer are people who don't believe there is a God.
Mm-hmm.
So they would maybe be qualified. I don't know whether to practice being an atheist, or are you just one?
Well,
I don't really know how to term that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so they believe in being an atheist, I guess. And yet yeah. those guys, because the other 90% are super tolerant, all of a sudden now they're running everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Well, this is what democracy is made of. This is the tension that exists, always has, always will. And I think that in America, we're a bit spoiled. You know, we have lived in a Christian culture all of these years, and we're not used to people standing up and rising up against it and creating issues. And as a result of that, we're not very well versed in trying to give an argument to why we're right, and we have those freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're learning, we're growing, and So it's all good.
Some of that tolerance, though, opens up a door that is more a Pandora's box.
Yes, but, you know, we have to encourage dialogue.
Dearborn, Michigan, for instance.
We have to encourage people who disagree to dialogue. We shouldn't be shouting people down.
No.
They may want to shout us down, but not all of them. There's a handful on both sides that give everybody a bad name.
Yeah, that's true.
There are folks in the conservative circles that I walk in who give conservatives a bad name. There's people in the other circles that give them a bad name. I think we have to have dialogue. I think we have to have a mutual respect for one another. Because without that, you know, the anger just gets worse and worse and worse until we end up shooting at each other in the streets, you know. And then, of course, there's always people who want to advance themselves by grabbing a cause and misarticulating it, putting all kinds of energy and misconceptions into it to try to play on people's emotions that empowers them.
I'm totally thinking of Al Sharpton right now. I can't think of anybody who embodies that more.
Yeah. No, it's true. And let's play into people's anger and let's make ourselves.
And if there isn't any anger there, please let's make some.
Yeah.
Because life's always better that way.
But in all fairness, that happens on the right as well.
Sure.
You know, there are people who are tapping into our anger, right, to try to advance their cause. Sharpton is tapping into other people's anger and frustrations. So it happens on all sides.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we've got Horse Creek Mike on the phone with us. I don't know if he can be on the chat room. He has typically bad trouble with the chat room, but he can use a phone. Hey, Mike.
He has a pen and a phone.
You got a pen and a phone, man. You could be the president.
God forbid.
I didn't say that.
The other side would hate me.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, fire away.
My question comes in that whenever we see Christians actually get out and vote, conservatives tend to win. The majority of Christians seem not to want to vote. And I've run into more than my fair share. People say, hey, you know, mine is not of this world. My kingdom will come. You know, my kingdom is of the gods, you know, in the future. And I look at this and I try to argue with them. God has given us a wonderful tool here, a wonderful nation, and for us to squander it and not take an active part is, in a sense, embracing the devil. How do we make this argument in a better way so that Christians do come out and vote their conscience?
Great question, Mike. Those of us in ministry ask that same question. We try to address it. We try to encourage people to be good citizens. And even though, of course, we are citizens of heaven, we are also citizens of this country. And when the scriptures were written, even the Apostle Paul, he's a citizen of heaven, but he also appealed to Caesar because he was a citizen of Rome. And so he saw a sense of dual citizenship, if you would. And I think that believers do possess a dual citizenship, and we have a responsibility to both. If you look at churches on the left, they have been using their pulpits for political reasons for decades and decades. Many of the leaders in the liberal front, the pulpit is where their campaigns begin. The double standard nowadays is that if you do that in a conservative framework, that you get letters from the IRS, you get letters from people who say you're not allowed to mix politics with your 501c3 status.
Yeah.
And so that is one that's being thrown at us all the time. I think what it takes, Mike, is a lot of courageous people in churches that say, not ugly, not mean, not nasty, but just with a firmness that says we do have a freedom in this country to speak. And this idea that churches aren't allowed to do that, that's not part of the Constitution. That's not part of law. That's part of bureaucratic statute that has been put in place for the purpose of preserving certain parties and certain influences. We have a freedom in this country to speak political issues from the pulpit. An awful lot of pulpits don't think that that's true. The other reason, too, I think, Mike, is that as pastors, we understand that our priority, of course, being that people would understand the gospel, the good news that Jesus Christ came, was incarnate. That's why we have Christmas. He was crucified and resurrected. That's why we have Easter. and that that has a great significant message for all of us as individuals, that our sins can be forgiven and our eternity can become secure. If in the process of talking about politics that that gets in the way of the message of redemption, that we perhaps see it as a lost opportunity to win a soul because they don't have our same political views. I think it's a legitimate point. Our first priority is to win souls. However, we also believe that if people do come to Christ, that it also impacts their politics, that they do vote biblically. And I have heard the same statistics that you have, and that is that if Christians would just vote, we could carry elections. Again, we don't think elections are what helps this nation. We think God is the one who helps this nation, but we shouldn't be passive. And that's not the history of this country. Christians should not be passive on a political front.
I always think of that that phrase, you know, even God doesn't drive parked cars.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't drive by looking in the rearview mirror.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know oftentimes it's quite difficult when we look at an election to choose between the two evils that we see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We don't like either of the candidates. We don't like either of their policies. You know, one is pro this and anti that and et cetera, et cetera. And they both vary from a proper Christian stance. But you have to choose your poison. Otherwise, somebody else is going to choose it for you. Let us choose the lesser of two evils, that which we can work with and correct, you know.
I think Christians,
none of us are perfect.
Christians and conservatives are disillusioned on many fronts. So this, what you're describing, is not just true of Christian believer or Christian politicians and so forth. It's true of conservatives as a whole. And that is that we're losing hope that elections work at all. We're losing hope that people stand up and they use the kind of rhetoric that appeals to those who are more conservative in their philosophy. And once they get into office, it changes nothing. Abortion or marriage, any number of political issues that are very important to those who are conservative. We vote for people who give lip service to this, but nothing ever changes. I think part of the reasons people don't vote is because they're disillusioned. We're losing hope that it works anymore.
No, I think that's right on target. I think people have just totally given up on our political system, which, you know, you can say all you want. It's still the best one out there.
Yes.
And we have a responsibility to get it back on track, and the only way you're going to do that is to vote.
It mm-hmm. becomes a self-defeating, you know, it's a snowball going downhill.
Right.
You know, you don't vote, and
it becomes
the disaster, and
a
then it's a disaster.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
On that note, we've got to take another quick break here. We were tardy on our last break, so we wind up with them all stacked up at the end. Be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Montgomery Gentry.
Every Sunday, we just feel like we need to get out more. Tons of guys we don't know.
I think when we get to heaven, we're going to be a little surprised. They're going to sing country when we get there.
Probably. Well, that's about all that's left in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
with a good message.
By the way, I hope people don't take me too seriously on some of the comments I make.
No, he was totally
goofing. Like
they
totally take us seriously.
Yeah. Look, we do our fair share of
goofing
off. Yeah,
that's why people tune into We the People Radio serious talk.
But. Well, this has been like Serious Sunday a little bit because, you know, a lot of times we talk about political things and environmental things and stuff like that. But, you know, I think it's important at this time of year, whether you had a great time at Christmas and you're looking forward to New Year's or you survived Christmas and you're dreading New Year's.
Right.
It's a hard time for people.
Sure.
You know?
And it's such an important time, and maybe for reasons that we don't always think of. I was sharing this at our church last week. You know, the Old Testament predicts what year Jesus would be born, 483 years before he was born. It tells us what town he would be born in. It tells us what family he would be born in. Daniel, who gave the prophecy of when Jesus would be born, was the chief magi 500 years before the magi came and visited Bethlehem. There's so much interesting and fascinating, not just history, but also prophecy. All of it so clearly defined and told, which proves, in my mind, the accuracy of Scripture. Along with that, it's like, why, if God put so much detail into these facts, why did he not make a motel reservation?
Exactly.
There's no room in the inn. So if he planned all of that, the answer, I think, is that it was also part of God's plan for the Son of God to be born in a barn. And many of us have heard, of course, the expression, maybe our parents shared it with us when we were growing up. Were you born in a barn?
Yeah.
Close the door or whatever.
That's true. And that was actually a good thing.
Yeah. Well, Jesus was born in a barn by design. God wouldn't have gone to the effort of having all of the rest of the prophecy fulfilled exactly as he had planned without that being a part of the plan. And that was an introduction to the humility of the Son of God. That this was one of the most important messages he delivered was his birth. That said, I've come, I'm joining the human race, I come to share with you not just who I am, I come to share with you a better way to live. And the better way to live is not to promote yourself, not to make yourself out to be a power hungry, you know, authority, grab all you can grab. He introduced us to a way of life that says if you want to find some joy and happiness, the best way to do it is to surrender to something bigger than you. Yield yourself to a cause and a purpose other than just you. Don't be a person of pride. Don't be a person of arrogance. The Christmas message is welcome to a life that is more satisfying. And I think that that's critically important for us to focus on in Christmas.
And so now the trick is how we parlay that into our daily life.
Yes.
And how we run our country that way and how we act as citizens. And,
and if we
and
don't,
for heaven's sake, stop rioting. Yeah.
And if we don't parlay that into our life, then we're going to miss out that he's the Prince of Peace.
Exactly.
He told us how to have peace. We're ignoring him.
Thank you.
Yep.
It's been a pleasure.
Guy Asherman from Reading Christian.
Yeah, we're so happy you joined us today.
Thanks a million.
Great way to start the new year.
Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can do that.
Hit it, Bob.
This is KCNR Shasta.